Magazines and Monsters, Episode 96, Detective Comics 339 from 1965. Hey everybody, Billy D, aka Doc Strange here, back with another episode of the show. And you know, every once in a while, I like to just talk about a crazy, kooky comic, Silver Age, Bronze Age, whatever age, Golden Age, it doesn't matter. I just like the, you know, a palate cleanse of anything I've been reading that's a little more serious and talk about something crazy. And I do get my fill of that every other week with my Zany Haney show. But again, I still, at least every couple of weeks, or I should say a couple of weeks, every couple of months, just throw in a wacky comic on the Magazines of Monsters regular feed here. And oh, did I find a good one today? And I found a good partner to talk to about this comic. Ross from Stop Let's Team Up. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. And thank you for asking me to read this, because I had never read it. And it is, I was trying to explain it to my wife and she just looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, this is we're going to be talking about Detective Comics 339. And this was cover dated May 1965. Came out late March, same year there. But I think from the cover, we can kind of explain to the listeners here what we're going to be talking about. It's a cover by Carmine Infantino and Joe Giella and letters Irish Snap. So what are your thoughts on this cover here?
Well, it's in the era of, if you put a gorilla on the cover, it's going to sell more. And I had to explain that to my wife. She goes, what? It's like, yeah, they discovered that if there was a gorilla on the cover, it sold more. Mm-hmm. And they would do it. So it's Batman bench lifting a gorilla over his head with Robin coming going, hold that gorilla, Batman. The instant he touches the ground, those bombs strapped to his body will blow up Gotham City. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Batman sounds like Shatner here. He goes, I don't know how much longer I can keep this up. And it actually looks like the gorilla is starting to fall out of his hands here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The caption at the bottom says it all, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Batman battles a living beast bomb.
And this is something that I found interesting. And I didn't think about it when I was a kid. And I really didn't think about it until fairly recently, where back in the mid-60s, obviously even before this as well, it seems like when someone made a bomb, it looked like something you would drop out of an airplane, which is totally ludicrous.
Yeah, I never, you now that you say it, I never really realized that they do. They look like torpedoes.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not trying to out myself to any government agency or anything like that, but when I was like 10, 11, 12 years old, my friends and I knew how to make what basically is an IED. You know, we would take an empty iced tea carton and we would put a couple of household items in it. I'm not going to say what they are because you never know who's listening to this. But you would put a couple of these household items in the iced tea carton, close it shut, shake the crap out of it, put it down and run, and it would explode. So oh, wow. Yeah, it's great. So I don't know how I didn't have like a hand blown off when I was a kid. But yeah, these genius level people, you know, are making bombs to, you know, just strapped to themselves, which you would think would be just something with the explosive itself and like a timer. But like I said, instead, it's like it looks like torpedoes or bombs, you'd smart bombs or something you would drop off of the wing of, you know, an F-16 or something. It's bizarre.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is.
but Carmine Infantino, Joe Giella, great, great work here, right?
It looks. Oh, great. No. The art throughout this comic is just amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely amazing.
It's a lot of fun. So, all right. Well, why don't we get into and his name is Carmack the gorilla. By the way, he does have a name. He's just not an unnamed gorilla. Carmack the gorilla. It made me think of the guy from Marvel that can karate chop stuff and make it explode. What's his name?
Oh my god!
Carmack.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But there's a big difference here. Carmack and Carnack. There's no relation and nothing at all the same about this. But. All right, well, why don't we dive into this here? So we've got Batman Battles the Living Beast Bomb, and this is a script Gardner Fox, pencils Carmine Infantino, inks Joe Giella. No colors, no letters. We don't know who's behind that, but that gets us where we're going here. And then there's just a quick little synopsis here on the Grand Comics database. It says, Walter Hewitt, a loner scientist, develops a ray that gives him the abilities of animals. Unfortunately, something goes wrong, and a gorilla gets his intelligence and forces him to commit crimes. More on that later. Batman battles the gorilla, but it uses the ray to get Batman's abilities. The gorilla makes a bomb that will go off if he is defeated, but Batman figures out how to stop the bomb from exploding. Well, I guess everyone in Gotham's thankful for that. So, okay. page one here. So we're, you know, when you're looking at a DC, I think Marvel maybe may have done this as well, but I think DC, I know they did this all the time. They would almost show you like a giveaway or something very climactic that happens way later in the story as the splash page. I'm not a huge fan of that, but again, well,
it's
kind of
like a second cover. I mean, yeah, when I was rereading Legion, it happened all the time. It would be another something to go, this is what you're in for. And they give it, you know, they take either a half a page or a whole page to just give you another like taste of what you're going to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is interesting here, isn't it? Right. Like this page, I mean, they have the Batman logo at the top. It's like the old school one where it just says Batman in plain, you know, block style letters. They're red and Batman's there with his, you know, cape and cowl up around him that you can only see a little bit of his face peeking out, and a little caption box that says with Robin, the boy wonder. And then I do like how Infantino and Giella did this box with this gorilla here. What do you think of that?
Oh, I love the caption box that has the little introduction and the title. Mm-hmm. And it's this gorilla with his arms around the top of it, like he's hugging it with this big smile on his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I do. I like, you know, that Infantino is an incredibly good artist. And I like, you wouldn't see this anymore in a comic book, these really ornate or special title boxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think kind of gone away.
If anybody that's looking, I know sometimes later in his career, Infantino didn't do the greatest work. I totally understand that. So if anybody's first impression of him was his, you know, late 70s and 80s stuff, I get the criticisms there. But again, he was in the waning years of his career. Go back and check out his Silver Age Flash. It's incredible.
Oh, and
it's great stuff.
He does both this and the Elongated Man story in here with two different anchors. And they're very different, but it's really beautiful. His stuff is amazing.
Yeah, the box where the gorilla here, it has his arms around it. It says, in his time, the masked manhunter has fought many mighty and formidable foes, but none with such amazing powers as Carmack, the gorilla who thinks like a man. If Carmack can gain for himself the battling prowess of Batman, there will be none who can stand against the gorilla in his grudge fight against humanity. And I'm thinking, where's Superman? But whatever. and then Batman battles the living bomb beast. And we have Batman here, and he's like, it almost looks like he's doing flipping, like a judo flip over his head, throwing the gorilla with these bombs attached to his chest. And the gorilla says, the moment you overcome me, Batman, the bomb strapped to my body will explode and annihilate everyone in Gotham City. But me, do you dare take responsibility? So it does kind of set the table here, right?
Yeah, yeah. It does look like he's just giving him a big judo flip.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Infantino draws action really well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really good. I love this page. Even though, you know, it's still a little bit of a giveaway.
And then they jump right into it here with this lovable loser guy, Walter Hewitt. He's kind of like, you know, like a kid in school that he wasn't good at sports or anything like that. So he just hit the books and became like this brilliant scientist guy. And it shows him, you know, creating this thing where it's like one of these things where it's two like almost like pods where you get in one and you put something in the other. And these rays come down and bathe you and the other thing. And he chooses like these animals and he gets the powers of these animals. Like he can almost take their powers. And it's not that they lose their powers at that point, but it replicates their powers and puts them inside of him as well. Right.
Yeah. Which was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But it's that 1960s or what? When was it? 65?
65. Yep. And he does say, Hewitt here, he's reading a book and he goes, the new science of bionics may be the answer I need to gain the physical attributes I've always dreamed of. And a caption box by the editor says, bionics is the study of living creatures and the attempt to duplicate their special properties. And I wasn't aware that's what that meant. So Steve Austin, you know, watch out. Here comes Walter Hewitt's coming for you, I guess.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's that kind of like 60s, how, you know, where it's the space race and we've seen all these advances in technology during the war and blah, blah, blah. And so you have all this, like, I mean, I'm reading FF right now, you know, 60s FF, and there's a lot of weird, weird science creations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you get the first one we see him use, it says an eagle. Actually looks more like a vulture, but he gets the powers where he can hear and see long distances. And then he gave himself the running speed of a cheetah and the jumping powers of a kangaroo. And he's jumping around like a maniac here.
Oh, yeah. And then he goes, well, let's do it with a gorilla.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He goes, to cap my achievements, I decided to incorporate into my body the tremendous strength of a gorilla. I bought a big anthropoid, which, where'd you get that? I mean, even in the 1960s, were there gorillas available to buy somewhere other than the black market? I mean,
yeah, that's kind of weird. It's like, really? Can you buy a monkey?
Mm-hmm. And he puts him in the machine, and then he goes, something went wrong. I got the gorilla strength, all right, but he acquired my thinking ability. And the gorilla, he just points. This is the top of page 4 here. He just points. And it says, a quick check showed that my laboratory equipment had undergone a phase reversal of its electrical power, reversing its flow and causing an opposite result to occur. And Hewitt thinks to himself, the gorilla is mentally commanding me to go out and rob. This is incredible. I cannot resist his willpower. I must obey. Well, where did the gorilla get that power from? Because
it's never mentioned.
Yeah, it doesn't ever say. Hewitt has some kind of mental powers where he can force people to do things. So where did the gorilla get those powers?
And so is this pre-Gorilla Grodd or post-Gorilla Grodd?
Well, that's what I thought, too. I thought it was Gorilla Grodd around in 65 and he had mental powers? Because I feel like at first Gorilla Grodd maybe didn't have mental powers. He wasn't...
He would wear a helmet. He would wear a thing.
Yeah, he just didn't have those powers like he does now. He has those powers now, I think, you know. Just, you know, running around. He doesn't need anything and to augment or anything like that. He just has those mental powers, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So I was like, that's kind of weird. What's going on here? that's roomy.
Yeah, that's what I like too. It starts with him turning himself in and then we get the flashback and he's able to turn himself in because the gorilla's asleep.
Yeah, when the gorilla's sleeping, he can't mentally control him, obviously. So he turns himself in, and, you know, the cops, they do lock him up. But they do think, you know, this guy's nuts. But they thought, well, you know what, let's just lock him up anyway. But I guess the gorilla wakes up then, because then he tears the jail cell door right off. And I thought to myself, okay, he tore it off. But you would just tear it off and throw it to the side. You wouldn't tear it off and then run around with it. But
uses it to smash through the front door of the police station just as Batman and Robin are showing up.
Mm-hmm. And then throws it at them like a weapon.
Oh, yeah. And it's definitely Infantino running poses, like they're falling over.
Oh, yeah. Yep. But Robin tries to jump over it, and he goes headfirst into the door jamb of the police station and knocks himself unconscious, which I find hilarious.
And Batman's trying to chase Hewitt, who can leap, and Batman springboards off the hood of the Batmobile.
Mm-hmm. Love that version on top of Batmobile.
Yeah, I guess Batmobile's now got a big footprint dent from him using it as a trampoline.
Yeah, he manages to subdue the guy, even though the guy has, you know, all these smarts and gorilla strength and everything else, right?
Yeah.
I like how he subdues him, too. He grabs him by the ankles, spins him around, and throws him headfirst into a brick wall. It's like,
oh, and I like what he says. He says, I'll fill you in later, because Robin's finally caught up. I'll fill you in later. Get back to the police station and summon a doctor. We're going to have to put Hewitt under anesthetic. Well, you just hit him, threw him headfirst into a wall. He's unconscious. He's probably dead.
Yeah, he won't need anesthetic for a few days. I think he'll be unconscious.
Yeah.
And then at this moment, miles away in the Hewitt House laboratory, Carmack the gorilla broods on what has happened. And so I don't know, since he can mentally command Hewitt, does he also kind of know and feel and see what's happening to Hewitt as well? Because otherwise, how does he know this went on?
Yeah, I didn't get that, because even at the end when he wants to, you know, he's how does he know what's going on? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, can he see through Hewitt's eyes? I don't think, do they ever mention it?
No, they never do. And again, that's you know, I love Gardner Fox, but I'm like, I get it. He was writing for 10-year-olds and they weren't asking these questions, but it's like, now that I'm not 10, so I'm asking these questions. Yeah, yeah, I'm not getting any answers.
and the most thought balloons are for the gorilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we get to hear his whole plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wants to use Hewitt's machine to take Batman's, no, I shouldn't say take, to get Batman's fighting prowess and intelligence, so then he'll be unstoppable. So he's like, I'm going to lay a trap, and I'm going to do it. And his trap is a little crazy. So it's not like I got to get Batman back to the Hewitt residence, and that's, to me, what would make the most sense. Get Batman here, where the lab is, so I can knock him out or whatever and throw him in that like little pod and I can do the switch. The gorilla instead makes the plan of, I'm going to go to a jewelry store and pretend like I'm robbing it, so Batman will come and try to stop me. And I love how Batman shows up alone, of course, because, you know, if Dick was here to help out, it wouldn't really, maybe this plan wouldn't work. And Batman thinks to himself, I'm a loner tonight. Robin's participating in a pep night rally at school. That's fantastic.
I like that. That is, oh, you allow Dick to have a social life and be a regular teenager. That, how nice of you, Bruce. That wouldn't happen in a modern comic.
No. And then there's like literally a 2-page, you know, brawl between Batman and the gorilla here. And it's really good.
It's great. I love it. Yeah.
Really good action back and forth, right?
Oh, yeah. A lot of dialogue, a lot of, you know, give and take. I like it. It's a lot of fun. And Batman uses a lot of karate on him, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. And Batman kind of has him on the ropes, but in the end, it looks like part of it was, you know, the gorilla just to kind of like get Batman thinking he's got the upper hand here, where the gorilla has put his trap inside this jewelry store. How long did this take to do?
Yeah, wouldn't it have been easier just to just call him out on the street?
Yeah, like I said, lure him to the house where the laboratory is.
Oh, yeah. But you get to see him destroy the bank and flip over an armored car and get his ass kicked by Batman. So where did the thing, when I had him off the ground, the clicking of the bomb stopped. It's like, that was kind of a weird, is that just mm-hmm. so you can have a scene where Batman bench presses a monkey?
I guess. I mean, I like how he captures Batman. So they went back and forth in the middle of this jewelry store. And then there's a button on the floor of the jewelry store. So this gorilla had to have made this trap inside a jewelry store without the people that work in there knowing about it. Or overnight, all in one night this happened, I guess we're led to believe. And he pushes the button, and he has the equipment from the laboratory in the bank. And it zaps Batman. It's like, wait, what? This is crazy. So he somehow concocted all this. And then Batman, he knows what happened. So he's like, hey, we're kind of screwed here. Now this gorilla knows everything I know. And I thought, does he know you're Bruce Wayne too?
Yeah, yeah.
We don't ever find that out. But like you said, then the gorilla goes crazy here, knocks over an armored car, robs a bank. And then Batman and Robin are suiting up here to go, you know, have their big showdown with the gorilla. And Robin says, what in the world are you doing? And Batman, or Bruce, excuse me, says, preparing a secret weapon for my next encounter with that gorilla. I've soaked my gloves in a liquid anesthetic as boxers soak their hands in brine to toughen them. And I'm thinking, those two things don't have anything to do with each other, Batman.
No, they don't. They're totally different. But I do like the idea of soaking his gloves in chloroform and punching him in the face. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and then he says, Robin says, Mr. Gordon says the gorilla's been sighted near Gotham Park. And he goes, Bruce says, good. Sooner we tangle that gorilla, the better. I like it. And the gorilla's got a plan of his own here as well. Like we know from the cover and the splash page where he's like, come on, Batman, let's fight. And, you know, Batman does fight him and does start swinging him around and punching him and throwing him. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a clicking noise and the bombs are clicking as if there's a timer. So this was a little, you know, again, Gardner Fox, praise him. I love him. He's great. But this was a little weird. So they act as if Batman has to hold the gorilla in the air or the bomb will go off. But then they change it halfway through to mean, oh no, there's a timer, and as long as he's in the air, the timer will just run out. But if you drop him before the timer runs out, then the bomb will go off. And I'm just like, that makes no sense.
No, yeah. Why timer and being touching the ground are two totally different things.
I like how Robin helps at the bottom of page 15 there. He's like, I'll help you, Batman. So instead of coming over and like using his hands to help hoist up the gorilla, Robin sits down on his butt and uses one of his legs to help prop up the gorilla. I'm like, what?
Yeah, or he's just cheering him on. You can do it, Batman.
Yeah, it's just like crazy. And eventually Batman can't hold him up anymore and drops him. And he goes, I failed Gotham City. And Robin, he's figured it out before Batman, which is kind of hilarious. He goes, it's okay. There's no clicking. The bomb's dead. You did it. And I'm thinking, what? And like I said, it's Batman then says, in a few days, Carmack will be himself again and we'll ship him back to the jungle. So all of this stuff is very temporary as well, which I don't believe they mentioned that earlier in the book either.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, because how many pages is this story?
16.
16? It's actually longer than I thought. Well, a couple of the pages are half pages because there had been an ad or something.
There's some really, really good ads in this comic. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, see, because in the app, it's just a blank. Some of it, the only thing in it is the Batman story and the Elongated Man story. None of the ads and none of the other stuff. They are nice. They did a nice copy digitally remastering them, though. They look good.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks great on the app. Yeah. Between pages 8 and 9, there's a 80-page giant Superman issue with Lex Luthor. You know, it's like a half page ad where you get that, and then you get some kind of toy at the bottom of it. And then I think it's on the bottom of this page here, the very last page, page 16. There's, another DC house ad where it's Green Lantern on the left and then Batman, an issue of Batman on the right. Fantastic stuff. But yeah, so I love how Batman is like, you know, Hewitt, he's got some stuff to answer for, you know, whether or not it was an accident or whatever. But they act as if he's not even going to see a day in court. In fact, Batman's going to offer him a job. I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. Batman says, you should learn to collaborate with people, Hewitt, not try to do everything by yourself. If you let people know you like them, they'll like you. I'm going to contact my friend Bruce Wayne. And Hewitt says, how can he help me? And Batman says, by giving you a job instructing other scientists at the Alfred Foundation for Scientific Achievement. I'm sure your pupils will like and respect you. And I'm thinking, is this that period where Alfred was dead?
Yeah.
Is that why they have that?
Yeah, that's why I said he was dead.
And then Hewitt says, I won't fail you, Batman. I have so much to teach them, so much. And I'm like, so again, he caused all this havoc.
And gets a reward.
Yeah, and gets a great paying job for it. I'm just like, he should be a politician, this guy.
I know. I'd like to screw up as bad as that, cause monkeys to build bombs, rampages, and they get a pay increase.
Yeah, I'm going to get a nice cushy job.
Oh, my God. But I could see why a kid loved it. And I've read a lot of these gorilla comics, and they are fun.
Yeah, it's actually, this one is actually in a DC Goes Ape trade paperback, too. I think I got it at like an Ollie's for like $5 or less, where it's just all ape stories. And it's got a lot of the Silver Age crazy ones and then maybe one or two more modern ones as well. But it's fantastic. And then I somehow, you know, Ross and I were talking before we started recording here. Somehow I got this actual issue, you know, on the cheap somewhere. And I'm glad I have it. I just saw the cover probably and was like, oh, like for a dollar or two, a 12-cent DC, even if it's a little beat up. Oh, I'm grabbing that just because it's crazy.
Well, DC just published a complete Detective Chimp. Hardcover, deluxe hardcover, and it's on the app. It's on the app already because all these Detective Chimps are collected on the app. And I was thinking, I get it. I like modern Detective Chimp. And I went, no, I'm not. These are cute. And I'll read them, but these are definitely little kid comics, you know, because he doesn't really talk. He can think, but he's just a monkey in the jungle who wears a Sherlock Holmes hat and a pipe.
Yep.
It's all crime. But nowadays he's part of the Justice League Dark. And I do like that character.
That's wild. Yeah. And there was a really cool, like you had mentioned earlier, too, a really cool Elongated Man backup here, too. What did you think of this one?
I thought one. I think the art was a little bit better.
Yeah, Sid Green's a good inker.
Yeah, I think it's Sid Green, and I really like Silver Age Elongated Man.
Mm-hmm.
because they are like real crime things, except, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Counterfeit Crime Busters was the name of this one. It was like you said, Gardner Fox again wrote this one, and then Carmine Infantino pencils, but this time Sid Green inking, and then Gaspar Saladino was the letter. And yeah, it's like a counterfeit money scheme by a mob guy that they thought had been killed but wasn't killed. And yeah, it's got, you know, like you said, Ralph and Sue are awesome. I love them. I mean, Sue's, you know, not maybe written in the greatest light in this one, just or even Ralph too. You know, the very first page after the splash page, Ralph thinks to himself, what can be keeping Sue? Every time she goes shopping, it seems to take forever. I'm like, oh, wow, easy, Ralph. She's just out shopping, man. Calm down.
I know. And I do like his original costume. It's just purple.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's really cool.
I like it. I like it. I like these are some of the Silver Age stuff I really like. And this is some of my favorite Infantino art is when Sid Green's inking in.
Yes, I really like it too. I mean, Sid Green, if I'm not mistaken, I think he may have inked some of the Silver Age Green Lantern stuff too. I have some of those trades as well. Yeah, and it's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. He's a great inker. He's very complimentary. He doesn't alter. It's still very Infantino, but it's just a good inker would just tweak art enough to take it to the next level. And I liked Joe Giella who did the Batman. It's fine and it's perfectly appropriate for Batman, but there's a little, you know, I mean, it's not gritty, but there's a little bit more, there's a heavier inking. It's a little more, cause it's crime. It's detective. They want to give it that kind of feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just looks wonderful.
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, and I miss Ralph as a character because he's such a great character.
Yeah, it's, you know, like you said, he's got his powers, but he's more, you know, into the detective stuff usually than he is the superpower stuff. That's kind of it's like detective first and, you know, superhero second, superpowers second when he's trying to figure something out.
Yeah, his powers are less to fight the bad guy and more to eavesdrop. Mm-hmm. And look for clues. And I like the way they do his plastic abilities. He doesn't do what Plastic Man does, form into other objects. He doesn't do the big super stretching that Reed Richards does. He just really kind of just gets, you know, really long and lasso-y and, you know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, they do use his powers pretty good. And again, you know, this is a character that's been around a very long time, longer than Mr. Fantastic. So,
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was definitely some inspiration, him and Plastic Man for, you know, for that character over at Marvel. But yeah, great stuff. It's just, it's a fun little story. It's only like 8 or 9 pages, you know, but a fun little story. It's just, there's no, you know, super villain on the other side of it. It's just like, he's just like almost like a detective cop kind of guy trying to catch, you know, people doing counterfeit money. And it's really cool. But like you said, the visuals in this are really, really top notch stuff. Like when he's in the bank there and he's trying to get the villains, there's like, you know, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 of them and using his powers to get them and capture them. It's some really, really good visuals there. Cause a lot of it takes place like kind of in the dark and at night here. Right.
Oh yeah, yeah. There he's following them as they do the break in.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot how good those kind of comics, the Elongated Man comics were. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think they did a collection, or maybe they did one of those 100-page. Oh no, it'd be like an 100-page giant Justice League. They would have them every once in a while.
Oh, okay.
You know how they would have they'd have a Justice League, then they'd have a JSA or a Seven Soldiers of Victory story, and then they'd have a solo story from somebody, whether it be a Golden Age one. I have one I just sold that had one of the Starman, Jack Burnley Starman stories in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And what I like is when I accidentally bumped what was the next story, because this is coming from, I don't know where, how the app is doing it, but it jumped to me to Detective Comics 302, where someone turns Batman and Robin into bronze statues, and Batwoman, the original Batwoman, has to save them.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I love that. Fantastic. Kind of, I bought the hardcover of Batman Annuals, Volume 2, and it's like from that era, because it had the... It had one of the other Starman stories, the Star-Man in it.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember you talking about that guy.
Yeah, but I found that copy of that comic in my little library around the corner from my house the day that Dave Steele told me about it. And that day I found it.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, because I was like, I pulled it out and I had to stop walking the dog and send a picture to Dave and Pete from Earth 2 Podcast. Goes, look what I just found.
That's awesome. Yeah, what are the odds?
I know. I've got it. The cover was loose. I'm going to probably frame it and just hang it up with my Starman stuff because it's just so weird. It's just so weird. But I like crazy. I like these old, we were talking earlier, like the Fox Infantino Batman, that's kind of weird before Denny comes in, because my Batman is really Denny and Neil, because that's what my brother mm-hmm. handed me first. But I'm not as familiar with this. I've read it, some of them, but I've read more of like the 50s stuff, Dick Sprang and
Sheldon Moloff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really have a soft spot for that stuff. But this was neat to read it because I forgot how, because, you know, sometimes there's some Silver Age comics are really rough, but when Infantino was in his peak, it's just stunning.
Yeah. Like I said, I had never read any of those earlier Flash comics, but a couple of friends had told me that the Infantino art is great and the stories are fun. So I got, you know, I don't know what DC calls them, but they started putting out in the last 4 or 5 years, I think, maybe those, you know, paperbacks of a lot of their Silver Age stuff. Justice League, Green Lantern, Flash.
I got a couple of those. Yeah, I got the Suicide Squad one, which is all of the pre Ostrander stuff, all the, you know, Brave mm-hmm. and Bold and Weird War, whatever ones.
Yeah.
And there were two for Doom Patrol, but I only got the first one. But yeah, I got a couple of those. They're nice. They're good. Cause I wanted something to kind of complement my Suicide Squad. And I went, that's good. It's all in one book. Mm-hmm. I wish they'd do more of them. They kind of like took what would been in an Omni and broke them in half.
Yeah. They're really nice trades. They're well made. I think Justice League, the first 4 volumes, and then I think I have the first 2 volumes of Flash and the first volume or two of Green Lantern as well. I think they're only up to like volume 3 or 4. I don't know if they've stopped making them.
Well, yeah, they did a pause on a lot of their collections during when Discovery and them were merging. And they're now just getting back, and they're pumping a lot of stuff out because the next 4 or 5 Omnis I got, most of them are DC. They're doing another Fourth World one that comes out next month or in a couple months, which is all the stuff after the New Gods and Mr. Miracle came back and like the Great Darkness Saga and all the Fourth World stuff between that and Byrne Simonson's run.
Oh, okay.
One big volume, but they're also doing Zero Hour, and they've solicited Gail Simone's Secret Six, which I cannot recommend more. It's if you like John Ostrander's Suicide Squad, you will like her Secret Six.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I hope they do continue with them because prices on single issues right now are very high. Yeah, you can still find them, you know, eBay once in a while in a lot, maybe a deal. But every time I look, the stuff that I'm interested in is like way high right now, especially when you calculate in the shipping. So when I see, you know, DC's coming out with a trades like these, I'm all over them because, again, that stuff has gotten crazy expensive. It's gotten out of my budget, that's for sure.
Yeah. I very rarely buy a single issue. I mean, I'm cutting my floppies down for new stuff that I want kind of have in my collection, like Justice Society stuff and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd just rather buy a trade. I'm starting to buy some more Epica collections because it's more cost effective.
Oh, they're great. Yeah, I love
them. Yeah. And I'm trying to, because I've bought so many Avengers Omnis, I'm trying to get from Omni 4 up, but do it with the Epics and fill some of the gaps, which is, because they map it well, because they put all the extra stuff in, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the crossover stuff, which is makes it even funner. So.
Yeah, I actually, since New Year's here, I think it was, bought the first three. I don't know if they were the first three put out, but at least the first three in continuity. You know, comic book actual production, you know, release continuity. First three epics that they had of Moon Knight.
Oh, cool, cool. The Doug Mensch and Kevich stuff.
Yep, yep. All the stuff from the beginning. The first, you know, everything from his first appearance, the first three yeah, like I said, in the release order forward. Well, yeah. And I can't wait to dive in.
Well, see, and I did that. I bought all the Power Man, Iron Fist. They're all in there. Now that I got the Romnibus, I have the one missing issue. And I got the Marvel 2-in-1s. And the other one I've been big on is Excalibur. I've got 1 through 4, and 7 and 8 are out. And then I just 5, 6, and 7 will come out, and that'll be all of it. And then yeah. I'm going to do Reed. And they're great. They've gotten a little pricey. They're $50 a piece now.
They are.
Yeah, but you can get them. I tend to buy from, like, cheap graphic novels and in stock, because you can get everything for about 60% of cover.
Yeah, sometimes they'll run those, like you said, if it's a $50 cover price, you can get them for $30, which is not bad, because an Epic has a lot of stuff in it.
Oh, no, yeah, the Marvel 2-in-1s I got volumes 1 and 2, and they're a little thinner than those, but I both got them both under $40.
Oh, wow, that's great. Yeah,
They're only missing the one issue, the Doc Savage issue is the only one not in it.
Oh, because they can't reprint that, yeah.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, it's online somewhere. But I love that comic, so I wish Marvel would do some more. I wish they'd do a Marvel team-up, and I wish DC would do DC Comics Presents and Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, I'm still always on the fence with Marvel 201 and Marvel team-up, because I have a lot of them. So I don't know if I should just break down and get trades. As long as I know they're always going to finish the run, I'm leaning more towards trades. I just worry that, like you said, they had the first couple of Marvel 201s out. What if they stop? And if they stop,
they both have come out in the last 18 months. It's like, but where's the Marvel team-up?
Yeah, that is kind
of
weird.
The quality of Marvel team-up early on is better than their early 2-in-1 quality. Marvel 2-in-1, the last 60 issues are rock and roll.
Yeah.
But someone posted they got their last issue. I forget who it was. And I went, well, it's such a fun comic. He goes, yeah, but it's a little up and down. And I went, and I got the Omni volume, the Epic volume 1. And I went, oh, yeah, you're right. There's some really.
That's some clunkers.
We've already covered one. The one with the Gollum where he's, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
The thing's going to Disney World, but.
Yeah, they always, like I said, had some wonky ones in there every once in a while. But yeah, I just like Marvel 2-in-1's 100 issues. I think I probably have 70 or 75 issues of that run. I just feel like, oh, I wish I could just get the rest of them. And then now that they have these trades coming out, maybe I should just sell the singles and use that to fund the trades. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I've got two of the hardcovers. They're the Thing hardcovers. One's Project Pegasus and one's the other Serpent Crown Affair.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good stuff.
Oh, God, yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, really, really good stuff there. So, all right. Well, yeah, like we said, you know, kooky, crazy comic here to do a palate cleanse, right?
Oh, no, it's nice. It's nice because I've been doing a lot of Kirby and New Gods. It was nice to just have something silly.
Something wild just to read to, get a fun conversation in here. So, yeah, thanks, Matt, for joining me here. I really appreciate this. This is great.
It's always a blast. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So if anybody is looking for you out there and what you have going on, where can they find you?
You can find me gabbing about superhero teams and Starman at Stop Let's Team Up. You can find that at Stop Let's Team Up on the Libsyn feed. And if you want to listen to me talk about Doctor Who, you can check out Gallifrey's Most Wanted.
All right. Fantastic. Yeah, everybody get out there. Like you said, social medias or even just any kind of podcatcher. Put those things in there, plug them in, and Ross will pop up. And then, hey, every once in a while, he and I will talk some Defenders and some other crazy stuff on his show as well. He does, you know, some rotations with teams, which is fantastic. And I always personally look forward to his Legion of Superheroes talk. That's always my favorite.
I'm up to Cockrum. The first Cockrum issue will be soon.
Ooh, boy. Yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I had to get through that, J. Winslow Mortimer. Once I found out his name was J. Winslow Mortimer, I can only say it that way.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, you need a monocle when you're saying that.
I know, that's why I kept thinking of the Monopoly guy. It's like, okay, your name is really Jesus. Could you get any more bougie white?
Oh, that's fantastic. So, all right
man, my man.
I will let you go here, and then I'll be back in a minute to wrap things up.
An heroic legacy beginning in 1941 that spans time, space, and the whole of the multiverse. Journey along with the Knights of the Stars, Ted, David, and Jack. They, along with Will Payton, Michael Thomas, Prince Gavin, Tom Kalor, and Courtney Whitmore. They take the mantle of Starman and continue his legacy. I invite you to listen as I journey through these adventures of all these heroes and the rest of the Starman family here on Opal City Confidential, a Starman podcast, coming February 2023.
Alright, everybody, that wraps up this episode. Once again, I want to thank Ross for being on the show. I don't get Ross on as much as I'd like to. You know, he's got a lot going on with his podcast and work and stuff like that as well. But, you know, hopefully you'll hear him on here again soon enough. And then also over on, you know, my The World on Fire podcast, where I talk, you know, All-Star Squadron, JSA, Earth 2, all sorts of different Earths and stuff like that. He'll be on that for sure with a couple of things coming up too. So definitely check out that feed. All right, thanks for listening, everybody.